Worth it to come here just for the introduction. I appreciate very much Baron David and a pleasure.
Yes. We have a sponsor for tonight. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention the sponsor. Mr. Rani Ackerman is sponsoring. Zechanish was his father, Eliezer Yaakov ben Mendel, the Neshom Shavin Aliyah, all the Debe Teira, Shul Zechanish Masai.
Finish at 10 o'clock, right?
What's that?
10 o'clock we finish. So again, I appreciate greatly Baron David and Rav Blazer and Rav Shapiro for giving me the opportunity to address you. It's actually my very first class or speech in North Miami Beach, and I appreciate the opportunity. The Megillah, which is what we're going to talk about tonight, is something which is really very familiar with all of us. The Megillah is probably the most known of the body, if you wish, of literature of Yiddishkeit. Every single kid has learned the story of the Megillah, and it's something which is really easily given over to children. You have Haman, who is a wicked person, and you could draw a picture of him as being an evil individual with a cruel face and a scowling demeanor. And you have the opposite. You have Mordechai, who is a great tzaddik, and you have along the way, you have Vashti, who's evil, and Esther, who's good, and there's a lot of black and white, and a lot of things which are very conducive to giving over to children. And many of the Midrashim, of course, everyone here knows. I'm not coming to Mechadish anything to you, but tonight I want to take a little bit of a different perspective and put together several Mamari Chazal and several Mefarshim to get a cohesive understanding of the story of the events leading up to the Megillah. The Megillah begins with a party. And really, the fact is that we kind of are walking right into a story. It's almost like we're walking l'havdil into a play, and we have no idea about the context. We have no idea why the party started, what's it's happening for, who's invited to the party, what's going on. And on the surface, it doesn't really make any sense. The party goes on for 6 months. Even given the licentious behavior of the Persians, a six-month party is frankly insane. Who has a party for 6 months? Makes no sense. And I mean, back then, nobody worked. Nobody had to make a living. You didn't have to get up in the morning and feed your family. You just went and you partied for 6 months. And Ahasuerus and his ministers in charge of the government, there was no government. Like, the whole government shuts down for an entire half a year. And then, to top things off, after the six-month period is over, Ahasuerus says, we're not finished yet. We need to have another 7. Imagine this. Congress says, we're taking a six-month vacation to party at your expense. You're paying for this. We're raising your taxes, and you're paying for this party. Okay? At the end of the Megillah, Ahasuerus raises all the taxes. Somebody's got to pay for this. And at the end of 6 months, no, Congress is not finished. We need another week to relax. That's what we need. Would this make sense? And we throw these people out of office. Doesn't make any sense. In order to answer and understand this concept, I have to ask you several other questions. You know, there's a famous story about a non-Jew, a guy, goes over to a Yid and says, how come all you people answer questions with other questions? And the Yid says to him, why not? Takes a minute. When you go through the Megillah, Vashti has a problem. Ahasuerus commands her to appear in front of him, and we all know the Mamari Chazal that she had leprosy, or you know, she had a tail grew. Why didn't Vashti simply send a message to Ahasuerus and say to him, you know, I have this problem, I have tzaras. I would appear, but I got tzaras, so please, you know, you don't want me to appear with everybody in front of everybody with tzaras? So be meichel me. Or why didn't she say to him, listen, a strange thing happened to me, I grew a tail. Why didn't she say that to him? Instead, Vashti not only doesn't explain her predicament to Ahasuerus, but as Chazal say, she really pounds it into him. She gives him a piece of her mind. She says, you're a stupid man, you're a foolish individual, and you should know that you get drunk after a mere 6 months of partying. My grandfather, my father, Belshazzar, was able to drink with 1,000 soldiers and he never got drunk. And you're drunk. And she really gives him a piece of her mind. Was she crazy? He's the supreme ruler of the entire world. If he doesn't like a person's face, he could chop off his head. And what? She's criticizing him in front of his nobility, in front of his soldiers. again, on the surface, it needs a lot of explanation. If you continue on the story of the Megillah, when Vashti doesn't come out, Memuchan, one of the advisors of Achashverosh, says to him, no, Lo HaMelech Levadi of Zavashti Amalka. It wasn't a sin only against Vashti, no! This was an Avera against all the Sarim and the entire country, this was an Avera. And therefore, Vashti has to be put to death. What kind of reasoning is that? It doesn't make any sense. Vashti didn't come out in front of the Melech. Okay, I understand the Melech has a right to get angry with her. He commanded her. She didn't listen to his command, but because of that, therefore, she somehow sinned against all the nobility, and she did an Avera, Graysa Avla, to the entire country because she wouldn't come out in front of Achashverosh. What's the understanding of that? What kind of reasoning would that be? I think that the understanding of all of this begins with a very famous change in trop. As we all know, that we lay in the Megillah, it has a certain trop. And we lay in it, Vayihi b'mei Achashverosh. And in the middle, there's a very famous change in trop. When we get to the point where it says, in the very first paragraph, it says, V'kelim, v'kelim shaynim, we change a trop. And everyone knows, that most people know, that the reason why we change a trop is because those psukim were... Those several psukim tell us that Achashverosh, v'kelim, v'kelim shaynim, Chazal tell us, were the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. At this point, Achashverosh commanded that the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, which Nebuchadnezzar had plundered from Tzidkiyo HaMelech in taking the Beis HaMikdash, and he had put into storage for all these many years, should be brought out and brought to his Seuda, and he was going to use them. And because it was such a tremendous bizayon to us, therefore, and we were in such mourning for it, therefore the Megillah changes. And instead of using the regular sound of chant of the Megillah, we change it, we make it into Megillah Seichel. That's a very well-known Chazal. Now, you have to understand, why is it that Achashverosh, at this particular point, at this particular juncture, decided he was going to use the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash? Why didn't he use the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash right away in the beginning of a Suda, or at a particular point during a Suda, during the sixth? At this particular point, Achashverosh felt confident enough to bring out the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, which his grandfather, which Nebuchadnezzar, the great ruler of Babel, had put into storage and then dare use for all these years. He felt confident enough to bring them out at this point. What was so special about this point? The last three kings of Klal Yisrael were Yehoyakim, Yehoyachin, and Mattathiah, who was also called Tzidkiyahu. Yehoyakim was an evil man, and he ruled for 11 years. And afterwards, when he was killed through Nebuchadnezzar, his son, Yehoyachin, took over. Yehoyachin was a young boy, and he only ruled for 3 months. At the end of 3 months' time, the advisors to Nebuchadnezzar said to him that, we think you're making a mistake. You deposed Yehoyakim, and you put in Yehoyachin, his son. Eventually this boy will grow up, and he will become a powerful ruler, and he will cause Klal Yisrael to rebel against our rule in Bavel. Get rid of him. So Nebuchadnezzar did exactly that, and he got rid of him, and he put in his place Mattathiah. He changed Mattathiah's name to Tzidkiyo, that's the name that we're all familiar with. Tzidkiyo was actually his uncle. He changed his name to Tzidkiyahu because he made Tzidkiyahu promise that he would not rebel against Nebuchadnezzar. And Tzidkiyo gave a shvuah, he swore that he wouldn't rebel against Nebuchadnezzar. Tzidkiyo also saw some private things that Nebuchadnezzar had done. Nebuchadnezzar was in the middle of eating Aver Min HaChai when Tzidkiyahu and Mattathiah had walked in on him accidentally, and Nebuchadnezzar was embarrassed for it, and he didn't want the word to get out, so he made Tzidkiyahu and Mattathiah swear that he would never reveal such a thing. And because he wanted to remind them constantly of the Shvuah that he took, he changed his name from Mattathiah and he made it the familiar Tzidkiyahu. Tzidkiyahu was a tzaddik. Chazal tell us he was an absolute tzaddik. But from Dezveg, and still in all, he went against the Shvuah, and he did reveal to people that Nebuchadnezzar ate Aver Min HaChai, and he also revealed to people, he also rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. And Tzidkiyahu ruled for a total of 8 years, And eventually, as we know the story, unfortunately, Nebuchadnezzar came, laid siege to Yerushalayim, and destroyed Yerushalayim and exiled the remnant of Klal Yisrael. And that's what happened. Now, the Navi tells us that when Yerushalayim was sacked, Nebuchadnezzar, the Navi goes to great lengths to tell us, Nebuchadnezzar was very careful to make sure that no harm befell Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Nebuchadnezzar gave direct orders to Nebuchadnezzar. He said to him, make sure that Yirmiyahu HaNavi is supplied with everything. Not only do I not want him to be harmed in any way, I want you to make sure that he's fed and he's clothed and he's taken care of in the best possible manner. Because if anything happens to Yirmiyahu HaNavi, it's going to cost you your head. And in fact, the Navi tells us, and Chazal elaborate, that when Klal Yisrael were being exiled out of Yerushalayim, Yirmiyahu HaNavi followed them and took the chains which they wore and he put them around his own neck, because he was spared the problem of having the chains due to Nebuchadnezzar's command. And Nebuchadnezzar ran over to him and said to him, no, you got to take these chains off. And Yirmiyahu said, no, this is my people. I have sympathy for my people and I'm going to put the chains on my neck just like they do. And Nebuchadnezzar said, no, please, you can't do this. Because if word gets out that you were mistreated in any way, it's going to cost my life and I can't have you do this. So Nebuchadnezzar went out of his way and the soldiery went out of their way to show great respect for Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Now Chazal tell us that there was a history between Nebuchadnezzar and Yirmiyahu HaNavi. In fact, one passage, one Maimon Chazal says that Nebuchadnezzar and Yirmiyahu HaNavi were sort of childhood friends. They grew up together. And Nebuchadnezzar had great respect for Yirmiyahu. He knew that the man was a tzaddik. And he knew that he, being a tzaddik, he was a person that he had a certain amount of respect for. But you see, Nebuchadnezzar also had another sense of respect, another cause to respect Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Back in ancient times, before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Klal Yisrael was supremely confident, when you learn the Navi, you'll see, that the Beis HaMikdash won't be destroyed. They had false Nevi'im, false prophets, say that the Beis HaMikdash will never be destroyed. Klal Yisrael will never be exiled. This is, after all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's building. And it was built by Shlomo HaMelech. And it'll never be destroyed. It'll never happen. So whatever avarice we do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be meichel in a certain sense. We might suffer certain deprivations, but to think of destroying the Beis HaMikdash and Klal Yisrael being exiled completely from Yerushalayim, that will never happen. And the fact of the matter is that the nations of the world also had a similar mindset. They had similar respect for Klal Yisrael. They never believed in their wildest imagination, in their wildest dreams, that the Eretz Yisrael would ever be bereft of Jews. They never believed that the Beis HaMikdash should be destroyed and Klal Yisrael would be exiled. Comes Yirmiyahu HaNavi and said, this is not true. Rabbi Sa'idin, he went throughout Yerushalayim, throughout Yehud and Binyamin, and he said, listen, Rabbi Sa'idin, this is not true. You're making a false assumption. It's not emes. If you do mitzvahs and you chayzer b'tshuva, yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will keep the Beis HaMikdash intact. You will never be exiled. But if you don't do mitzvahs, and you don't learn Torah, and you continue to be able to avoid the Zohar and the other avarice that Klal Yisrael were guilty of, it's not true. You're going to be put in galus, and the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. And nobody believed Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Very few Yidden believed him, as witnessed by the fact that Klal Yisrael did not do tshuva, and we were exiled. And the Goyim didn't believe Yirmiyahu HaNavi either. They said, this can't be. This couldn't be. Nebuchadnezzar had certain simanim from Shemayim that he would be able to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And he did. He came to Eretz Yisrael and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. But when that happened, and he exiled Klal Yisrael, suddenly Yirmiyahu's stock rose. Here was the man that predicted the unpredictable, that prophesied the unprophesizable, if there is such a word. He thought about something which cannot possibly have been. And he said it. And he was Kaveya Masmer. He said it in public. And this is what was going to happen. Yirmiyahu HaNavi was a very well-respected person by Nebuchadnezzar. Very well-respected. By the whole world, Yirmiyahu HaNavi was very respected. The problem with Yirmiyahu HaNavi was that Yirmiyahu HaNavi said something else. Yirmiyahu didn't just say that Klal Yisrael is going to be exiled. He also said something which was a very chilling prophecy, a very chilling nevuah, to Nebuchadnezzar and the people of Babel. He said, yeah, Klal Yisrael is going to be exiled, but in 70 years' time, Klal Yisrael is going to come back to Yerushalayim, they're going to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, they're going to repopulate Yerushalayim, it's going to be their city. Imagine this. If anybody else would have said such a thing, people would have laughed. They would have said, that's ridiculous. But Yirmiyahu HaNavi was the man that prophesied something that no one ever believed could possibly be, and he's the one that said, me, I'm Yirmiyahu, I'm a Navi, and I'm telling you that after 70 years, this is what's going to happen, Klal Yisrael is going to be put back into Yerushalayim. That's what's going to happen. People were astounded, and they were scared of this prophecy. Every king wants to have full control over his kingdom, and doesn't want to think about the possibility of a fifth column, people rebelling from him and leaving his lands. He didn't want to think about that. The question though was, when did the 7 years begin? When did the 7 years start? Yirmiyahu was not clear as to when the 7 years started. And therefore, the people who heard him were also not clear when the 7 years started. Nebuchadnezzar died while Klal Yisrael was still in Golis, was still in Babel. Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 45 years. His son, Evel Merudach, ruled for 23 years. And his grandson or son, there's a machlekes in Mefarshim, if Belshazzar was the son of Nebuchadnezzar or the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, regardless, he ruled for only 2 years. So there were 70 years between the beginning of Nebuchadnezzar's rule and the last king of Babel, who was Belshazzar. Now, what happened was, Belshazzar had made a tremendous miscalculation. You see, Belshazzar, when inheriting the kingdom from Evel Merudach, was a very, very powerful king. He ruled the entire world. Nebuchadnezzar ruled the whole world, Evel Merudach ruled the whole world, Belshazzar ruled the whole world, and he had puppet kings throughout the world. He had puppet medinos, people that ran his government for him. Among those puppets were two very well-known rulers. One of them was known as Daryavesh, or in English he's known as Darius, and he was the ruler of Madai, the Madaim, or the Medes, as they say in English. So Darius was the ruler of the Medes, and in antiquity he was a very powerful ruler and a very famous king. And Koresh, who in English is known as Cyrus, was the ruler of the Persians. He was known as Cyrus the Great. He was a well-known and very respected ruler, but they were puppet kings under Belshazzar. Now, Koresh and Daryavesh get together and they say, you know, this Belshazzar fellow, it's about time for him to give us our freedom. And we believe that we could really beat him in war. So the two of them pool their resources and they gather together armies and they decide that they're going to destroy Belshazzar. And the two of them make up an agreement. They say, you know, if we are victorious, then we're going to split the kingdom. We'll split the rule. First, Daryavesh would be the ruler, Darius, and then afterwards, Koresh, Cyrus, would be the ruler, and they take turns ruling and have this kind of a shutvis, this kind of a partnership. So Koresh and Daryavesh advance on Belshazzar in his capital city of Babel, and a great battle ensues. And Koresh and Daryavesh's combined forces fighting with Belshazzar's combined forces, and the winner of that battle was Belshazzar. Belshazzar defeated very roundly Koresh and Daryavesh, defeated them greatly. And Koresh and Daryavesh were forced to retreat to the woods, the forest, outside of the city of Babel. And there, as night fell, and the battlefield was clearly won by Belshazzar, Koresh and Daryavesh kind of licked their wounds in the forest outside the city. Belshazzar, of course, was overjoyed. He had won this tremendous battle against, many people thought that he would definitely lose, because Koresh and Daryavesh were great generals, but he won this tremendous battle against his archenemies. And as such, he had this tremendous party. He was excited. As the Navi relates in Daniel, he made this huge party, a tremendous simcha. And he gathers together all of his officers, his generals, 1,000 men, and he brings them into this huge ulam, this huge hall, this huge place, and he decides to make this grand feast. And they're eating, and they're drinking, and they're having all sorts of entertainment, and it's a grand old party, and the whole city is commanded, go all out and just party. So everyone is eating and drinking, and they're making music and this tremendous noise, and everyone's having a wonderful time, a tremendous time. And Belshazzar has such capacity to drink that Chazal tell us he's able to drink a toast to each one of his 1,000 officers. Now think of that. means there's 1,000 cups of wine the man is drinking, which is an unimaginable amount. He must have been a giant of an individual. Anyway, as this is happening, as Belshazzar is having his tremendous party, he realizes that there's another dynamic which is in play. And there's another cause of celebration. He says, you know what? Today is actually the anniversary of my 2-year rule. So you know what that means? That means that my grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, ruled 45 years. My father, Evel Merudach, ruled 23 years. I ruled 2 years. That equals the magic number of 70. You know what happens at 70 years? The Jews are supposed to go back to Eretz Yisrael and rebuild their base of English, but it didn't happen. So obviously, although Yirmiyahu HaNavi is a great leader and a tremendous Navi, a tremendous prophet, but Yirmiyahu made a mistake. The first part of his prophecy, I'll grant him, I'll tip my hat to him. Tremendous, he made a tremendous prophecy. But the second part of his prophecy is simply not true. So you know what? We have more cause to celebrate. At that point, he makes a fatal error. He commands his servants to bring out the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash for his personal use. And they go to the storehouse, and they take the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, and they bring it to his table, and he gives it to all of his nobility and his generals, and they drink from it, Belshazzar drinks from it, his queen drinks from it, and as Chazal say, even his royal dog drank from the cups of the Beis HaMikdash. And as Belshazzar is having a grand old time, and he's sitting at the front of his table, next to him is a whitewashed wall. And suddenly, as he's looking at this wall, a very famous story, a hand descends from heaven. And the hand writes 4 words on the wall. And Belshazzar sees this handwriting on the wall, and he begins to shake. He's terrified. He knows that these words are portentous, and he knows that he's seen something very important, but he can't figure out what it is. And he's overcome with such a shivering that his knees begin to knock one against the other. Now, to understand what this means, you have to realize that kings back in the day were looked at as people of unimaginable dignity. People wanted to be like the king because he was looked at as the most moral, the most ethical, and the highest level of what a human being could possibly be. That was all embodied in the king. So the fact that Belshazzar was nervous in front of a soldiery was something that was unheard of, a scandal. New York Times headlines, Belshazzar shows some fear, some sweat drips down from his forehead. Unimaginable. But Belshazzar was terrified. And he makes a proclamation. He says, stop the party right now. Everyone stop, music stop, drinking stop, eating stop. I need to know what these words mean. And he calls all of his wise men. He says, all my chachamim come here. Anybody in the entire city who knows anything, please come here. And they all come, and he says, anybody who can simply interpret the meaning of these words, I will not only put this very fancy golden necklace, a royal necklace around his neck, and I will not only dress him in purple royal robes, but I will give him 1/3 of the kingdom. That means Belshazzar ruled the entire world. So he's offering 1/3 of the world, 1/3 of the civilized world to a person who can simply interpret those words. So of course, every single Tom, Dick, and Harry tried to interpret the words, but nobody could figure it out. And Belshazzar was terrified. And he was so terrified, he lost his dignity, and he was losing his grip on his sanity. And his queen came over to him and said to him, don't get so nervous. I know somebody who can interpret this dream. You know that many years ago, when your grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, needed a dream interpreted, and nobody in the kingdom could interpret the dream, there was a man who not only was able to interpret the dream, but whereas Nebuchadnezzar was not even able to recollect the dream, this man told him what his dream was and he interpreted it. And he was considered to be a great man for your grandfather Nebuchadnezzar and your father Evel Merudach. Now he's, so to speak, in mothballs. Let's bring him out. He lives on the palace grounds and he will interpret the dream. So they go and they call Daniel. Daniel, and they say to him, come to the king. The king wants you to interpret it. So Daniel takes a look at these words. And Belshazzar makes him the same offer. I'll give you the gold necklace. I'll give you the royal robes. I'll give you 1/3 of the kingdom. Just interpret these words. And Daniel says, I don't want your necklace. I'm not interested in your robes. I'm not even interested in your kingdom. I'll interpret the words for you. The words were, Mene Mene Takel Ufarsin. Those were the words in Aramaic. They were written in a funny way, and therefore nobody could understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the Chachma away from people to be able to understand what those simple words mean. Menei menei, as Daniel explained, were that HaKadosh Baruch Hu counted your good deeds, your righteous deeds, against your misdeeds. And he found you chaser, he found you very, very lacking. Very, very lacking. Takel, he weighed the things that you did right and the things you did wrong, and he found that the things that you did wrong very much outweighed the things that you did right. Ufarsin has a double meaning. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will break your kingdom, and Paras also means will give it over to somebody else. Your kingdom is going to be torn away from you and given over to somebody else tonight. You are going to die tonight. And you are going to be the last of the rulers of Babel. And from now on, Babel is going to be a simple footnote in history and nothing more. Well, Belshazzar couldn't have been too happy to hear this. Especially knowing that Daniel was a very wise man. And he put the robes on Daniel and the necklace on Daniel, and he gave him a third of the kingdom, probably because he wanted Daniel to be invested in him and to daven for him, but Daniel would have none of it. Well, Belshazzar makes an announcement to all the soldiery, and he galvanizes them into action. He says, you know what? I got word that Koresh and the Yavesh are going to mount a counterattack. We have to stop eating, we have to get out of this room, we have to get the soldiery together, we got to man all the walls. Get down and get out of here and go man the walls. So the soldiers, all the officers that are with him, listen to him, and they race to man the walls, and they're all half drunk or three quarters drunk, but they go down and they round up as many soldiers as they could, and they start manning the walls and making sure that everything is in place. Now Koresh and Deyavish, for their part, had heard and seen this great celebration. They had seen the great fires in the city, and they had heard the music, and they saw the people on the walls were acting drunk, and they realized that it's actually a propitious time for them to counterattack. So they gathered their armies together, even though usually armies in those days didn't fight at night, and they did launch a counterattack. Now Belshazzar did not want to leave the defense of the city into the hands of his generals. He went down himself, bechvodo v'atzmo, to look at the defense of the city. And he went around the walls of the city to make sure that everything is in place and to give instructions to make sure that his orders were heard. So, he says to the captains of the guards of the different locations, he says, I want you to know that not only am I sure that Koresh and Deyavish are going to make a counterattack, but I have word that there's going to be an attempt made on my life. Somebody's going to try and kill me. So now, I'm commanding, that the walls of the city, the gates of the city be closed completely. In ancient times, the gates of the city were open a little bit to let dead bodies out, or some people went just outside the walls, because the opposing army wouldn't come directly up to the walls of the city, so it's considered safe to open up the gates right next to the walls of the city, people can walk out. Belshazzar ordered all the gates of the city completely sealed. And he said that if somebody comes, I have no idea how the attempt in my life is going to be made. But it's very possible that somebody's going to come in, and he's going to look like me, and be dressed like me, and he's going to say that I am Belshazzar. Well, you should know not to believe him. I'm here in the city, and if anybody comes from outside the city, and wants entrance into the city, and he claims that he's me, don't listen to him. Don't listen to him. Kill him. And Belshazzar gave that order to all the guards around the city. Well, at one point during the night, remember, what was Belshazzar doing before this? He was drinking. Now, not to be too crude and to try and be as polite as possible, but when people drink through an entire night, especially something intoxicating, eventually you have to go to the bathroom. So Belshazzar needed to go to the bathroom. And he was in a dilemma. You see, he didn't want to go back into the palace to go to the bathroom because he didn't want to leave the defense of the city to his soldiers for even one moment. And to go to the bathroom in front of the soldiers, he wasn't prepared to do because he was a king. And a king doesn't do such a thing like that. It's not dignified. So he went to the captain of one of the gates and he said, listen, I need to step outside for just a minute. I'm going to go outside, leave the gate open. Yes, I commanded it to be closed, but now I'm commanding it to be open. I'm stepping outside for just a moment, and I will come back, and you will let me back into the city. So the captain said, of course. And he opened up the gate, and Belshazzar stepped out and took care of what he had to take care of. But at that moment, there was a changing of the guards. And the guards that had been watching the first part of the night now switched over, and a new captain of the guards came, and new soldiers came, and unfortunately, this captain of the guards neglected to tell the new captain, the old captain didn't tell the new captain, hey, listen, our commander Belshazzar is outside the walls, when he comes in, let him in. So Belshazzar comes into the city, and the new captain of the guard sees him, and he says, what are you doing? He says, I'm Belshazzar, your ruler. He says, yeah, sure. We heard from Belshazzar that an attempt is going to be made in his life, and somebody might actually dress like Belshazzar and look like him, and he's going to try and enter the city. We heard that. Off with your head. And Belshazzar was killed. Well, Koresh and Diavish launched their counterattack, and they routed the leaderless Babylonians. The people from Babel were absolutely decimated in front of Koresh and Diavish. They succeeded in climbing over the walls, opening up the gates of the city, and their armies poured into the city. And they had specific instructions to kill every single member of the royal family. That's what they wanted to have done. So they went busy, they went about killing every member of the royal family, and there was a great fight within the palace. Hand-to-hand combat within the palace. The Babylonians were desperately trying to save their lives, and Koresh and the Yavish's men were trying to destroy as many of them as they possibly could before they escape. Now, Belshazzar had a daughter, and his daughter was sound asleep in the palace, and she heard these frightening noises. She heard the noises of soldiers screaming. She heard the noises of sword on sword and sword on shield and people dying. That was a very frightening thing for a very young girl. She woke up out of her bed terrified. What does a girl do when she hears these noises and she's terrified? She runs to her mother. She ran down the hallway to her mother's bedroom. All this Chazal relates. She ran down the bedroom to her mother's, the hallway to her mother's bedroom. And she ran and she said, Mommy, Mommy, I'm terrified. But her mother was dead. She had already been killed dead in her bed. So she ran to her father, to the throne room. And she runs into the throne room and she sees a person sitting on the throne. And in her confusion and her fear, she thinks that it's her father. And she says, Tati, Tati, I'm terrified. I'm frightened. Help me. And the person on the throne was actually Dayavish. And Dayavish turns to her and sees this young girl and he has tremendous pity on her. And he said, don't worry, I'll save you. Nothing will happen to you. The moment the words came out of the Yavish's mouth, he regretted it. He knew he made a mistake. You see, this was Belshazzar's daughter. All the Yavish needed was for Belshazzar's daughter to grow up and gain the following of all the Babylonians and cause a rebellion against him. Remember, Belshazzar was his ruler, and his daughter could rightfully claim that I'm now your ruler. He had a problem. But he couldn't go back on his words, because the Persians had a rule. And the Medians and the Babylonians have this law that the king, when he says something, is infallible. He can never make a mistake. So obviously the king couldn't admit in the first few minutes of his rule that he made a mistake. So he was caught in a tremendous dilemma. So he thought quickly and he figured out what to do. This fellow at that point walked into the throne room. He was a junior officer of no background whatsoever. And Dayavish said to him, you are going to marry this girl. Figuring that if he marries her off to somebody inconsequential, she's going to end up being a nobody, and nobody will respect her, and it'll take away the threat from his kingdom. The name of Belshazzar's daughter was Vashti. And the person that walked into the throne room at that propitious moment was Ahasuerus. Well, Ahasuerus and Vashti marry. And Dayavish sits on the throne for a year, and he dies. And then the succession takes place, and the Persian king, Cyrus, sits on the throne for several years, and eventually he dies. A civil war breaks out, well, not really a civil war, an argument breaks out between Paras and Madai. The Persians say that we need to have the kingdom, and the Madai people say, no, the kingdom is ours. So they decide that they are going to take the kingdom and give it to somebody who they feel is going to be a puppet, and both groups feel that they can control lest there be a civil war between the two sides. And they couldn't give the kingdom to a commoner, that would be debasing the kingdom. So they take Ahasuerus and they say, listen, you married Vashti, you will be the king until we sort out our situation. Ahasuerus had a reputation as being a foolish man, and he had no background whatsoever. So they gave him the kingdom because they assumed that he could be controlled. It turned out that Ahasuerus was a lot shrewder than they gave him credit for. He killed the Sarai, Paras, and Madai, and he managed to take the kingdom under his own iron grip. 3 years after he took the kingdom and managed to kill all of his enemies, he made this party. The only problem was that he wanted to be the supreme ruler over all his kingdom, but there were two problems that stood in his way. The first problem was Vashti herself. You see, Vashti was the daughter of Belshazzar. And Vashti and Ahasuerus both knew that the only claim that Ahasuerus had to the kingdom is that he had married Vashti. Vashti said, "You are the king because I'm the queen." And Ahasuerus really couldn't answer that. And it's not a very geschmacka thing for your wife to say that your entire position in life comes because of me. So Ahasuerus is very upset. He decided and he schemed to humiliate Vashti in the best possible manner that he could. And he said, "Vashti, I want you to come out without any clothing in front of everybody. I'm going to humiliate you in public to show you that although I became king because of you, but you are just a nothing. You are a zero and you command no respect among anybody." And Vashti was very upset by this. And she was annoyed tremendously. And she understood the scheme that Ahasuerus wanted to do. And therefore she answered him with a tekifis, with strength. She said, "No, you're nothing. You're not the king at all. You're only the king because I am the queen." Assuming that her Babylonians would come to her defense, but they didn't. Eventually, Vashti was killed. And that's why Memuchan said, "Lo al melech levadi of Vashti amalka." Vashti did not just stand up against the king. She stood up against the entire position of the king. And all the nobility, besides the Babylonians, would be threatened by Vashti's rebellion. Therefore, you must kill Vashti. You must destroy her. You also must make sure that there are no sub-people within the kingdom, and therefore you have to make sure that everyone speaks the same language. I'll just conclude, because I know my time is up, with this point, that the second set of people who threatened Ahasuerus' rule were the Eden, were the Jews. Because remember, there was a 70-year prophecy. And Ahasuerus understood that although Belshazzar made a mistake, but the 70-year prophecy is still in effect. But Ahasuerus made a cheshbon from the time that Tzidkio became king. Tzidkio was a puppet of Nebuchadnezzar. And at that point, Ahasuerus felt that Klal Yisrael had no rulership, what's independent rulership. And there's when the 70 years started. So therefore, he made a party. The party was a six-month party because, as the Yaros Devash explains, that Klal Yisrael really has two Rosh Hashanahs. We have Rosh Hashanah in Tishrei, we have Rosh Hashanah in Nisan. He understood that the 7 years were up, but he didn't know which Rosh Hashanah was the end of the 70 years. So he made the Rosh Hashanah, he made the party begin in Nisan, because that's the Rosh Hashanah for Malachim. He figured the 70 years were up then. He let it extend for 6 months because he wasn't 100% sure if he was right. At the end of 6 months' time, in Tishrei, when Klal Yisrael was not redeemed, he felt confident enough to take out the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash and to cause another 7-day party, which was supposed to get the Eden to recognize that yes, you are the supreme king of all the kingdom and we are not going back to Eretz Yisrael any longer. We are going to be your subjects. And now you can understand why Mordechai was so upset. You're going to go to a party celebrating the fact that Klal Yisrael will never leave Paras and Madai, will never leave Persia, will never go back to Israel. You're going to a party celebrating the fact that Ahasuerus says that Yirmiyahu was a Navi Shekar. That cannot possibly be. And that is the Hakdama of the Megillah. And that's why Mordechai went out, b'cherev b'chana, so to speak, against Ahasuerus and against his ideas. Thank you for listening, and a good night.
Thank you.